On this programme last week, the Children's Minister Roderick O'Gorman said that he would be bringing details of a redress scheme for the survivors of mother and baby homes to Cabinet in the coming days. In the past, redress schemes have been controversial for excluding survivors or re-traumatising them by forcing them to recount upsetting experiences. So, how can those mistakes be avoided in this case? I'm joined now by Mairead Enright, Reader in Law at the University of Birmingham. Mairead, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Can we start by talking about the mistakes which have been made by other redress schemes? What are they and how does the government avoid them this time around?
I think there are quite a few things we could talk about, but I suppose the broad headline for these failings is that people who've been through similar schemes in the past have said that they're re-traumatising, that they're denigrating, and they're difficult to engage with. So I think the first point is that we want to see the Minister have a plan for genuine ongoing consultation with survivors and with representative groups. We would want to see a plan for trauma-informed administration of any redress scheme. And we'd want to see the government do away with some of the strings that have come attached to previous schemes. So things like gagging orders, which prevent people from talking about their experience of the scheme, or requiring people to sign a waiver of any other legal action as a condition of participation. So those are some of the things. There are others, but those are some of the things that have come up in the past that we'd like to see improvement on for this scheme.
How does the government decide who should get access to this redress scheme? Because you have people who spend time in mother and baby homes. You have people, you have children who were born in mother and baby homes. You have children who were adopted out of mother and baby homes. And presumably, there will be some limits as to who can get access to the scheme.
Yeah, I think from a human rights perspective, it might be more helpful, you know, rather than talking about categories or hierarchies of victim or survivor, it might be helpful to focus on the kinds of harms that emerged from the testimony given to the Mother and Baby Homes Commission of Investigation. So I think at a kind of basic level, you would want to see some form of redress to anybody who spent time in a relevant institution, so mother and baby homes, county homes, some forms of private residences. People who were boarded out, obviously, should not be excluded from that kind of provision. It's important to remember, you know, if you look at the Magdalen Restorative Justice Scheme, there was no minimum time limit set there. Payments started at a 0 to 3 month period. So you would want to see some recognition of that as a common experience for people who spend time in the institutions. You might also expect to see some form of redress in relation to illegal or forced family separation. And then other people will have experienced specific harms in the course of their time in an institution or as a result of the adoption law. So you would want to see some engagement with a range of issues, including, you know, physical, emotional, sexual abuse, discrimination, neglect. And some people were reinstitutionalized. So think about, for example, disabled children who were not considered for adoption. You might see some cases, or you're likely to see cases, where there are aggravated factors around adoption, so evidence of falsification of records, which of course makes reunification much more difficult. Also, the Commission sought to distinguish between women who did unpaid commercial and unpaid domestic labour. And I think that distinction, if it holds in the redress scheme, would be entirely yes. discriminatory. But the point is to start with the harms and work backwards.
Yes.
Because the legitimacy of the scheme depends on it being comprehensive or as comprehensive as possible.
Yes. And we're talking about financial measures, but there may also be non-financial measures. What outside of money should this redress scheme include?
Yeah, so your listeners may remember that there was a collaborative forum of survivors as part of, or was supposed to be part of the Commission's investigation, and they have already made some recommendations. I think it's important to recognise that there is a plurality of issues here, a plurality of stories, affected locations and so on. So you would want to see an engagement that allows the widest possible range of modes of commemoration or modes of engagement. But a couple of things come up in recommendations again and again. One is the issue of archives, access to your own personal records or family records around institutionalisation, which, by the way, will be essential anyway for making applications for any redress scheme in one form or another. You might also want to consider things like family reunification, funding for voluntary DNA testing and so on, you would expect to see funding for events and gatherings. You know, people will have noticed the Dublin Honours Magdalens gathering. You could see scope for that kind of event in the future, and so on and so forth. Right, but I think the most important thing is that there has to be ongoing engagement with survivor groups to make sure that the form of commemoration reflects diversity of needs.
Mairead, thank you very much indeed for talking to us. We'll see what happens in the coming days. Mairead Enright, reader in law at the University of Birmingham there.